For me, the place where it started was I had a very radical moment in my life when I really didn't know what to do. And I decided to go on a pilgrimage without money through my country of origin, South Africa. This was in 1991. Nelson Mandela had just been liberated, but the country was in a high point of violence. And I decided I am simply going to walk the land because I literally don't know what to do anymore. I was deeply involved in academia, doing my master's in cultural anthropology. I was deeply involved in social activism, working in the anti-apartheid movements. And none of that felt like it was actually touching the heart of what I was searching for.
So welcome back to Green Planet, Blue Planet podcast. I'm here today with Kosha Joubert. Welcome, Kosha.
Hi, thank you. It's great to be here with you, Julian, and everybody who's listening.
Yeah, you're calling in from Italy, is that right?
No, from Scotland. I live in the eco-village of Findhorn in Scotland, so far in the north. Pretty far north, yeah.
Perfect.
Originally in Scotland, but this is
I don't know how I thought this was Italy, but it's Findhorn, Scotland. I think I had another eco village in Italy somehow in my mind, but that's wonderful. And I do want to talk with you about all things eco villages. But you just said it. You grew up in South Africa, kind of in. I remember us having a conversation. We talked about like kind of growing up in a broken world, right? Where communities were still in apartheid, and it had a big influence on you, if I remember that correctly. Do you mind taking us all the way back and how that kind of shaped your worldview in wanting to heal, those social dynamics in the world?
Yeah, I mean, I think that most children, or as children, maybe I can make this a general statement, that we come into this world with a very open heart and so much love for our parents and those closest to us, but also for the world around us. And we start off in a state of connectedness where we sense what is happening around us, and we come with a natural expectation that others would be able to sense us as well. And it takes a while for us to realize that this is not necessarily the case in our cultures, and that our parents maybe don't feel us completely, or that the world around us is not built on the premise of connectedness, but in many cases, a premise of separation. And that premise is, of course, taken to a high point of expression in a system of apartheid, where separation is expressed in a society where people of different so-called races are kept separate in different living environments, different schools, and different systems of privilege. So that is a pretty harsh form of injustice to grow up in. And, as a child, I think that this is a long time ago. I'm over 50 now, but my memory is of being able to watch points of reference in the world outside of me that made no sense, that where I could taste injustice. And I started questioning the system that I was a part of as a child. And I was responded to in the system by denial, by explanations why it had to be this way. And there was a discrepancy that grew between me and the world around me. And I, to be quite honest, I think that many of the young people in the world are experiencing just this, like a discrepancy between what their hearts tell them and what they see in the world around us. And I've also come over the years of my life to find out more and more that the systems of privilege and systems of oppression are really globally organized and lead right back to those roots of separation. But it shaped me deeply, and it became a motivator for me to firstly move out of the so-called safety of the mainstream that I was, that I found myself in, moving to Holland when I was 15, 16, and finding out that the mainstream there was a more refined system of global oppression. And then really going on a very deep search of, well, what would feel meaningful to me in this life, and how do I want to engage in this world? And yeah, I'm bringing that here today because I think that the pain in this world is becoming more and more apparent, and that more and more young people are in a deep place of searching for other pathways. So I feel very close to all of us that are searching different ways of being.
Yeah, thank you so much for taking us on that journey for a few minutes here. And I agree with you, you know, your original statement that as children, we're born with open hearts. We're born with this openness, this connectedness, right? And the world of separation, no matter actually where in the world we find it, but we very likely find it in these days that we live in. It's an interesting puzzle to solve, right? In the sense that how do we encounter a world that is somewhere between unjust and at times insane, with right. a heart-centeredness, with an openness, with you know, also in a way of forming trust. You know, sometimes people say trust is something we earn. I'm not sure if that's really true. You know, trust can be something we carry into the world and spread. What's your thoughts on the process of trusting and creating that? You know, maybe I can ask, what's required for you to trust?
Yeah, from my worldview, you know, as we'll probably speak about later, like I spend around 30 years of my life deeply immersed in the regenerative community movement and the Global Ecovillage Network. And then really came to the point that I thought, oof, all these great intentions, these loving hearts, this beauty of expression of high dreams of humanity, and the extreme limitations of those, watching how high dreams run into resistance within ourselves, within the world, and then turning my focus point to look at what is the sand in the system? What is it that doesn't allow us to manifest our dreams fully in this world? And I came to work more and more fully with the energy of traumatic content, trauma of the past, ancestral, historic, collective trauma, individual trauma that keeps us from, for instance, unfolding our full trust, but also finding a world that is worthy of our utter trust. You know, at the moment, I think we're born into a traumatized world. That's how I would describe it, where certain, the myth of normal, as Gabor Mate calls it, where the myth of normal tells us this is how it is. You know, we're naturally competitive. We're naturally in wars with each other. There's a natural scarcity of resources, and we're naturally fighting to get them. And, you know, this is how it is. But in our heart of hearts, as Charles Eisenstein says, you know, I believe that we know that this is not the highest truth, or many of the indigenous elders that are teaching us that as humans, there's something about taking a natural, our true place within the hoop of life or the circle of all beings, where we can respect and support all other living beings around us. And I believe that that's where our systems start coming to rest, coming home, and actually reigniting trust, which I believe starts with starting to trust ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I can only trust myself if I feel that I can find my own place, and that my place is a place that I can sit in fully without feeling unethical. It's really hard to trust myself when I'm part of a system of destruction. It's really hard. You know, we have so many jokes still about the disease of humanity that has inflicted this planet, you know, where many young people who are really wondering, how am I meant to be fully human at this time when I am so much searching for ways to go beyond the systems of destruction? And it feels like we can't get out of them. How do we get out of them? You know, however we live our life, even when we're deeply part of regenerative communities, we will always be integrated and connected. So for me, growing trust or unfolding the inner trust is in a way the same movement as unfolding love, you know, and coming home to myself. And for me, the place where it started was I had a very radical moment in my life when I really didn't know what to do. And I decided to go on a pilgrimage without money through my country of origin, South Africa. This was in 1991. Nelson Mandela had just been liberated, but the country was in a high point of violence. And I decided I am simply going to walk the land because I literally don't know what to do anymore. I was deeply involved in academia, doing my master's in cultural anthropology. I was deeply involved in social activism, working in the anti-apartheid movements. And none of that felt like it was actually touching the heart of what I was searching for. I co-organized a conference with South African women in Amsterdam, where women who were in exile, women who were searched after in South Africa, came together to grow a women's movement. And I had been studying linguistics and cultural anthropology with a dream of learning how to communicate across separation and cultural barriers. And at that conference with these powerful women from all areas of life and all cultures of life in South Africa, I felt like such a guilt-ridden, white, young woman. And I literally realized that I didn't know how to communicate. I hadn't learned in university what I wanted to learn. I also realized that the flow, the waves of evolution in humanity was leading to apartheid being dismantled. Nelson Mandela had been liberated. The time was ripe and I was no longer needed. My activism was no longer needed for that. It was happening. So I realized that neither of those pathways were my pathways, political activism, the fighting against the existing systems, or the academia, you know, that it was too much of a distance to life. I wanted to be fully immersed in life, but I didn't know where to go. And my path led me to a pathway without money, because I had issues with where money came from and how it was shared. And yeah, and I went on this walk. I went on a walk. And it's very simple, you know, very deep fears that came up in me. You know, as a young white woman, I was 23 at the time, walking into a society that was extremely highly violent at that time, where I had been told, you know, as a young white woman, I would be raped, I would be murdered as soon as I walk out, especially into black townships. You know, that's the story I was told. And I just started walking up the coast of South Africa and walking through different areas, through townships, and it changed me inside out completely and utterly. You know, it started off by realizing that actually the white people, especially the white men I was meeting, were by far more dangerous to me than the black men. And really transforming my inner, the hidden racism that so many of us grow up with, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, what a heartbreaking.
It's interesting.
story to be part of. And more than that, I found myself existing in a world where I was walking without money in a country where poverty was high, and just noticing, because I didn't want to carry anything with me. You know, I felt like it would be stolen off me. It would just make me more of a somebody who can be stolen from. If I just walked with nothing, there would be nothing to take. So, you know, of what interest would I be? And the amazing thing was that how little I needed to survive, how little we need to survive, and how much generosity I met in people. I mean, of course, I was like a complete and utter unknown being, you know, walking up the coast. I slept on the beach on a thin blanket. You know, I had very few clothes with me. And I just looked at, where can I get water? Where can I get something to eat? And just found my way and swam across the big rivers. And that is what broke down the barriers between me and the world. And it broke down the barriers between me and nature. You know, I was afraid of nature. How many of us are afraid of nature? We're afraid of spiders. We're afraid of scorpions. But we're also just afraid of space or the ocean or the sky or sleeping alone in the dark or walking in the dark or crossing a river, you know, a fish. Or we're like afraid of... Anyway, for me, breaking down those fears inside myself was amazing. I got to know the night sky. I got to know the beauty of flowers, of the ripples of the ocean, waking up in the early dawn, watching the sunrise, you know, seeing the, walking down the beach and finding the most beautiful shell as if it was a gift of the ocean to me, watching the patterning of flowers, you know, how the number 5, the number 7 keeps returning, the insects that visit certain plants. So it was just like a homecoming to my land, the land that my body was born into, that I love the smells, the beauty, and it, my, like my home and my body has never been the same. Like I came home to my body, home to the planet, and I came home to the universe by being naked within it. But the other thing was that I started coming home to other people, because I met people from all aspects of South African society that I started speaking to. And I had huge fears. You know, many of us walk with great anxieties and great fears about connecting to each other. But the nakedness which I brought to the situation, which was really born of a complete and utter not knowing what else to do. You know, I could have committed suicide, but I don't have any cell in my body that is interested in suicide. So this was kind of the alternative to me. But it just brought me back to life, and it brought me back to human community. But most of all, it brought me back to myself. And it reinstated a trust that, you know, much later in my life, I met an indigenous leader of the Maori in New Zealand, who told me that in her tradition, we do not need to earn a living. We do not need to earn a living. Because simply by being born on the planet into a body, we have our earth right to be alive. And we need to respect this deeply in everyone else and in ourselves. And that how life is meant to be is that nature and the world and all systems create enough abundance for our living. And that there is no need to earn a living, you know. Yes, we can gift more to life and create more abundance. But I think it's something like that deep inner wisdom that came home to me. That the whole story about how much we have to work, how much we have to do things that we don't want to do, how much we have to develop a career, adapt to mainstream society, to build a big house in order to be able to survive, that all of that fell away and I came home. And from that place, my trust was reinstated and I feel like I could find a different pathway into life. So that's a bit of a long response.
Beautiful, but yeah.
I think many of us might have a response a bit like this of the places. I saw your story about going to family in Latin America as a young person and finding.
It definitely did a very similar thing to me. Yeah.
Yeah. I think many of us have a story.
It changed the fear of the world. Yeah. This myth, you mentioned it earlier, right? The myth of separation. I think it starts with the myth that we're at war with the natural world. And you mentioned that as well, right? Like we can be afraid of so many things in the natural world. I mean, truth be told, I definitely grew up being afraid of spiders in a country where there were no dangerous spiders. So I don't know where that came from, but over time it did evolve to realize. And I think this is what regeneration and the regenerative movement is all about, right? Is understanding that there's a natural principle at play that is the intelligence of life that is, kind of inviting us at all steps along the way to come into synergy, to come into a form of sharing that path between all living beings, the natural world, the human world, flora, fauna, all of it, right? And so it's sometimes really hard to picture for people that are still living in the story of fear, mistrust, or separation. And as you said at the very beginning, it's also very difficult or maybe even not needed to blame people that feel that separation, because most of us grow up in a world where at first you are faced with that kind of contrast and it's like, oh wow, what is going on out there? But if we don't lose that purity in our hearts, that knowing in our hearts that knows this is not actually the entire truth, in my experience, having interviewed many people about this and meeting even more people in the world, no matter where I go, this is like a shared human gift that we actually are all in an interplay with life. And many of us, many more maybe than we think, are realizing that. And are realizing that the story of separation that is, kind of over our heads through mainstream media or the systems of power at play, that those stories are, they're less and less appealing, I believe. The stronger the contrast gets, the less they are appealing to people. In your case, it inspired you, right? This pilgrimage and coming back home to yourself, as it sounds like, and then therefore life at large and, other people. It inspired you to, steward and build this eco-village network, right? This global network or at least be part of driving this movement, right? And I'd love to hear how, where that then became maybe the next logical consequence for you, that you have to be part of building a life-affirming movement, a regenerative movement, rather than trying to fight, like you said earlier, through academia or political resistance. And I believe many people go through this notion that, yes, academia and knowing all the answers or, standing up for what is smart and intelligent to do or, political resistance can be appealing for a while, but then it seems like a very powerless lever compared to simply building the world we believe in, to standing up for the world that our hearts do know is possible.
Yeah, I mean, in the meantime, I must say that I really feel that each of us has our own pathway, and academia is amazing. It has a lot of power also, right? But it's just, it wasn't my path. Maybe it's not your path. And so what happened concretely was that I ran at the end of this pilgrimage, I ran in one of the homelands, I ran into a community where Black and white people were living together and growing community together. And I suddenly realized that this was doing something that even the Truth and Reconciliation Committee couldn't do. It was like re-knitting the fabric of society bottom up. And I realized that I could understand this, and I could understand how bringing community concepts out into the world, growing community in the world in a way that re-knits the connectedness of all life, how this would be incredibly powerful. And that's what I then completely swam in for the next 30 years. So firstly, finding that this was again, a natural next step in humanity, like growing a system that had become destructive, meant that also a natural spin-off was people aware of that who were setting out for the high dream of within that system or islands in that system, growing regenerative communities. And, you know, we grew a global network of the Global Ecovillage Network, deeply linked to, for instance, the Foundation for Intentional Communities and other intentional community movements, the co-housing movement, transition town movement, the permaculture movement, amazing array of fantastic projects around the world with amazing leaders and founders and experts who have developed a huge skill set and toolkit for regenerative living on this planet. And, you know, the whole thought that actually we can come to a place where we start listening to nature deeply. And as we listen, we naturally start finding our place as a co-creator in nature. And we support certain species. We bring in certain support systems just to help abundance to grow faster. And how we can restore natural systems. Currently, we have the amazing ecosystem restoration movement that has grown out of this. So, enormously important and beautiful to watch. I've lived in different eco-villages where over a period of 10 years, 20 years of co-creating with nature, we just watch the species move in and the biodiversity explode, where on a planetary level, it's of course imploding. So we can absolutely reverse that process. And this is what many indigenous tribes have been doing for centuries, you know, working. Yeah, I could say a lot more to that. And it's fascinating and it's amazing. And we've got currently such a rich array of people working on that. But at the same time, also economic restoration, that we can work with our economic systems in a way that are restorative, where we have local currencies, where we work with social entrepreneurship to really support life through business. All of that is possible. And we grew that enormously. And cultural regeneration, because we have so impoverished the cultures of our world. So to really celebrate the diversity and the richness of culture. And we developed a lot of tools for social regeneration. How can we actually work with conflict in a way that makes it fruitful? How can we process who we are? And yeah, that's the area where I've always had a focus point, also from my background, but that kept growing. And, you know, I would say that I, in the eco-village movement, in the regenerative community movement, I feel like we have shared so many seeds that thousands and thousands of people, like we reached out, you know, to six continents, to all continents in the global network. We have like outreach to over 6,000 communities around the world. And yet, I feel like we've come to a time where a certain model of regenerative initiatives, which are more separate from mainstream, where here we have an island of regenerative life and here we have mainstream, that we're coming to the end of that model. And even to a model where we say, here I have the purity of wholesomeness and love in my heart, and there in the mainstream is somehow the impurity of holding on to fear. We've come to the end of that story. And we more and more, we're coming to a time of more intricacy where we understand that this is a new pattern, a a regenerative pattern that has already infiltrated mainstream, that has infiltrated many mainstream political systems, mainstream businesses. And very often now, some of the mainstream businesses are actually further ahead than some of the eco-villages and some of the technologies that they're bringing out into the world, right? Some of the political systems with citizens' assemblies have learned a lot from community movements and are bringing this out to more informed and inclusive democratic systems. Yeah. I'm not saying that our mainstream systems, what we can see on the surface, is very broken and very destructive. And it's painful to look at the world. But at the same time, I feel that we live at a time where a new inspiration is informing human beings on all places in the system. And conservative forces are informing human beings everywhere in the system. We find holding on to fears in the most exciting regenerative communities. We find innovation and downloading the future in some of the most conservative institutions of our world. So there's something about breaking down.
The separation is falling apart. Yeah.
Yeah. And that is the true breaking up of separation, you know, because it was as if for many decades now, there was a new separation between the left and the right, between, you know, and now that we start understanding, wow, I'm carrying the fear in my heart. And we are so deeply connected as a collective nervous system that this fear lives between us. And we're in this together. You know, there's no easy way to say this. We are in this together, literally. I mean, this was at some of the United Nations climate conferences. This was the big sentence, we're in this together. And I remember when there was this indigenous boat at the center of the entrance hall to symbolize that we can only come through this as the whole of humanity. Yeah. So how are we going to speak to each other? How are we going to reach out to each other across all divides, where regeneration comes back to sit at the heart of all aspects, you know, and we don't give up searching for it in the most conservative governments or, you know, oil companies. And
yeah, like how you painted that picture, that no matter which place at this point is being infiltrated by that intelligence in life, by that regenerative movement, by that awareness that flows through so many people, right? Like in a story of interconnection and interbeing, that is an alive principle. That's not just something we need to learn and understand in an academic sense, but it's already intrinsically in us. And when we start listening, it doesn't matter if you work for an oil company or, you know, if it's the United Nations, these messages will arise. And at some point, hopefully, you know, just to push back a little bit, but sometimes it can seem like that it's a bunch of virtue signaling without a lot of follow-up action or without a lot of follow-up integration. But I think just by it arising already, and maybe the signaling is the first step, right? More inclusivity is the first step, but then it'll also over time absolutely lead to a complete different form of leadership. I think where there's many people, you know, the two of us included, that are demanding this from the place of heart, where it's just a very clear, this is the world we give our best to live every day, right? This is the integrity that we can stand for as individuals. And then that's also the world we want to see on the outside, rather than maybe just continuing to point the finger, which would be the separation.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and you're not pushing back. I'm with you. I'm with you in that place of grieving when I look at the world. And I was part of the Paris Climate Agreements, you know, and I am part of the global relationships which carry the pain of the past the pain of slavery, of colonialism, of racism, of unintegrated trauma from the past that doesn't allow us to manifest our high aspirations. So, you know, I think the shift that I'm making in myself and that I'm working on at the moment through the organization that I'm leading at the moment, which is called the Pocket Project, Creating Pockets of Healing for Pockets of Trauma, is really focused on collective restoration. So instead of ecosystem restoration, global restoration, like how do we restore our relatedness to each other, to the world we live in? And in order to restore our relationships, you know, because it's our relationships that information flows come through. It's our relationships that collaboration emerges from and creativity can land in. And there is so much fear and so much past, unintegrated past that lives in the space between us, that this free information flow and the dance is very hard to realize, you know, and I think all of us can experience this even in our most intimate love relationships, you know, whether it's between men and women or, you know, whatever form we live, but we notice in our most intimate relationships how hard it is to deeply trust and to build a healing relationship rather than a relationship where separation of the past keeps showing up. So that deep work of, you know, becoming aware of the depth of pain that sits between us, and then becoming more willing to be with it and to start sitting in it so that we can start melting it. And I'm literally speaking about, you know, from the relationship to my husband, I'm married, you know, how do I melt the pain that comes to me from generations of women living in patriarchy, experiencing sexual abuse, experiencing domestic abuse, you know, how do I melt that history in me as I meet my husband to rebuild a co-creative love between men and women? In my teams, how do I rebuild a relationship of trust and mutual celebration in teams, building on a history of power over and false hierarchies? And, you know, how do I bring back healing into those spaces? As I work with people from different cultures, how do I bring the humility and the learning of a, you know, being in a white privileged body to those interactions and start actually learning and healing in each interactions? And this is what I call a trauma-informed way of living, where I am aware that the space between us is not free. It's not open. It's not just available to download the perfect future we all know is possible. There is sand in the system. And if I'm not willing to sit with the sand until it feels welcome enough to start melting, I cannot yet be part of the healing movement. You know, the global healing movement for collective restoration. So, I mean, I hope this doesn't sound abstract, because for me, it's not abstract. It's an incredibly hopeful movement. And yeah, maybe I'll just leave it there and hand it back to you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I loved every time in this episode when you went on one of those, you know, deeper shares. You know, we're just scratching the surface with words usually, but I don't think it's abstract at all. I think we all can relate to, you know, that inner and outer kind of both trauma and also, you know, kind of this baggage we've inherited by being on this planet, which I don't think needs to stop us, but we're at a time in our human story where if we want to form more meaningful relationships, and relationships both with the natural world, with ourselves and with others, you know, the pain, the fear, the epigenetic information from generations past, it will show up. It's part of the game. It's part of how we become better leaders. It's part of how we become better partners in business, in life, in love, in all of it, right? And so I don't think there's a single person who is actually fully present with themselves who can't relate in one way or other, no matter where you're from, which culture, which phenotype, no matter what body you're in. I think we can all relate about that. Where I think it gets really tricky is when those stories then when we keep it with the trauma rather than understand, okay, showing up for the trauma work and resolving that and resolving the shared grief, the shared pain about, you know, the state of the world, what does that liberate us to now do, right? What does that free us up to then actually not just imagine, but live and make a next courageous, daring step forward? Because I do believe it takes courage and it takes a certain amount of daring to step forward in this world and not just to point fingers backward and yes, all of this was wrong in the past and that's why today we live in destructive times or in pain. I think that's a learning curve that all of us individually have to reconcile. And culturally speaking, no matter, you know, where you're born, your cultural group usually has some form of reconciliation to do with another cultural group. It's just part of the human story, really. But in order to step forwards, that courage, right? And I mean, courage is probably a word related to the French word cor or like heart, right? It comes from the heart again. It's this stepping forward from the heart. And you know, that's why I said earlier in this episode, if trust is just earned, we could probably always find a reason to mistrust others and say, you didn't quite earn this yet. But if trust comes, like you explained, Kosha, from a place of knowing oneself and knowing one's own relationship with the world and with others, both through the generations and through the grief and the trauma, as well as in the here and now, where we have conscious influence over, I think trust then enables us to have this power from our heart to step forward and mature in the process of being humans. I'd love to hear a little bit more from you there before we, you know, kind of wrap this episode, because I know this is, you know, a deep passion in you that has been born out of being so active in the Eco Village movement, because you've seen it stop movements probably everywhere, right? Like great intentions, great words, and then the reality is humans meeting humans, and there's always some form of grief, some form of personality hiccup, some form of communication hiccup. What are some of those golden nuggets of what you've been learning that, you know, can help people tuned into this episode?
Yeah, beautiful. You know, and I like how you've put it. So I would say we come, part of our culture is also not to want to look at the past because it's holding us back, right? And trauma, you know, the definition of trauma is also overwhelming experience which our nervous system can't process. So it puts it aside for later. And humanity has had many of those experiences, collective, ancestral, individual, that we've put aside and we're not aware of them. They move us unconsciously. It's what creates. You know, you could say 50% of our world today is created from trauma in an unconscious way. That is the myth of normal. And the other half of our society, I mean, this is very simplistic saying 50-50, is created from free life energy, from true creativity, from resourcing and resilience and the wisdom and learning from previous generations. So we have these two streams coming to us, the unconscious traumatic material and the resourcing and wisdom of integrated experience, you know. And this is the part that is hidden. We can see its effects, the separation, the how we create, how we end up reaching a ceiling in the development of our projects, and then they start breaking down again. How we have great climate agreements, but we can't implement them globally as a global community. All of these, so we can see all the symptoms. How we have high dreams when we start a new love relationship, and then we run into the same patterns that we recognize from previous relationships again, you know. So there's a lot of unconscious driving force in this. So courage is needed in both areas to move ahead and really allow the, you know, I would literally say the highest light to guide us in whatever way we practice and we would, in whatever way we align with that highest motivation and light within us, but also to allow our. And to me, we need often more courage to look at the darkness than the light, if we want to call it darkness and light. But to look at where the resistance are, where the difficulties are, and not look away and think this is just a difficulty in my way, but actually look at it with so much love and compassion that it has a chance to come home.
And well said, yeah.
And in my experience, you know, looking at the places that are most painful for me to look at are often the places where the deepest treasures lie. And where, you know, it's like going into the darkness, into the dragon's den, where the dragon is protecting the true treasure individually, collectively, ancestrally. You know, there is so much treasure and so much energy to get there. And as Thomas Hubel, who I work with very closely, often says, there is a double whammy of energy that can be freed up here. You know, there is the energy of needing to keep it unconscious, you know, because in our society, in ourselves, we're using a lot of energy to keep things out of our awareness, what Otter Scharmer calls absencing. It's an active process. So liberating, and any of us who've done personal trauma integration work will have had an experience of that, how energy flows back to us and potential flows back to us, but also a constant holding away flows back to us, like the energy that we need to keep things frozen comes back to us, you know? So a lot of energy flows back to us. And when we bring that to our moving forward, it becomes like a balanced walk where no, we don't get stuck in processing the grief of the past. You know, no, we walk a balanced life, but we allow life to guide us. And that is maybe the deepest trust, that we trust life to bring us to the places where we run into difficulties, we run into resilience, and life invites us to look at the texture, the information within that resistance. Yeah. What are we meeting that seems like it's in the way, but it actually is the way? And on the other hand, the high inspiration and the high love and the high, but that we walk a balanced path. And that is really what I think true regeneration wants to, is asking from us. It's like if you're wanting to do ecosystem restoration, you can't just plant the beautiful flowers, you know, you have to work in exploration. What are the pests that come in? What is the deep and solid composting processes that are needed, you know? And only when I take both the beauty and the seeming ugliness of nature fully into my heart can I build regenerative ecosystems. And it's similar with human systems, you know? There's a lot of hubris and archaeological matter that wants to be reintegrated and compost to create new soil for humanity to flourish on.
So beautifully said. I really appreciate the, you know, both the absencing as well as the presencing, and kind of that, the through line of, you know, of being fully with this entire process of life, you know, if you want to, again, in more like the polarity, the light and the dark, right? So beautifully said, Kosha. I enjoyed this time with you and your insights. There's so much more from you and about you on the internet, TED Talks and work you do with people like Thomas Hubel, as you just mentioned, and you know, and others. And so I encourage people to keep exploring and keep finding you and your work. And is there any call to action anywhere you would love to point people as we're finding an end to this episode today?
Yeah, well, specific. I mean, I don't know when this will air, so I'm saying this. But, you know, I really invite people to come to our website, pocketproject.org. And we're having ongoing every year. We have a fantastic collective trauma summit that we developed that, you know, more than 100,000 people participate in. So it's super rich. We're also developing now a climate consciousness summit, which runs in parallel to the UN climate conference, where we look much more deeply at, you know, not just the trauma of separation from the world, but also what is truly happening. We use a method called global social witnessing to really be informed by what is happening on the front lines of climate change and listen to people on the ground at the climate conferences and much more, but also look at the traumatic nature of our responses to the climate crisis, both apathy and hyperactivation that we both see playing out. And we have a whole cycle of what we call international labs that are starting, where we look at specific areas of collective trauma and go on year-long journeys. We have free calls for people who want to gain more skills for trauma-informed living. And I just invite people to explore this and shake off your fear of looking into the darkness and find the joy of looking into the darkness like I did on those beaches in South Africa many years ago, and find the treasure in the darkness that can really, I think, bring key learning for us as we move forward as humanity. And thank you, everyone. Thank you to you, Julian, and thank you to everybody who's listening for your heart and your engagement at this time.
Thank you, Kosha. Thank you so much.